Nemoto presents American presidents. President Herbert Hoover. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Christopher voice. Running time, approximately 13 minutes. If you enjoy this program, explore the rest of our library. Every show is designed to stand alone, but together they form a larger project. A guided tour of the forces, intellectual, emotional, political, technological, that built the world we live in and the world we're about to enter. On the night of March 4, 1929, as the festivities of Inauguration Day faded and Washington's elite drifted from ballroom to ballroom, Herbert Clark Hoover sat for a quiet moment in the Red Room of the White House, staring into a vase of white roses. The celebrations had been grand. Bands, parades, speeches, dignitaries, all hailing the nation's new president, a man whose life story seemed almost mythic. A self-made millionaire, a global humanitarian who had fed millions during and after the Great War, a brilliant engineer and organizer known worldwide as the Great Humanitarian, Hoover appeared to represent everything the optimistic, technologically driven America of the late 1920s wanted to believe about itself. But as he sat in that softly lit room, Hoover's brow was furrowed. He was thinking not about the praise he had received that day, but about the economic figures he had been tracking for months, signs of imbalance, warnings he could feel but not yet fully see. He had the instincts of a man trained to analyze stresses in a structure, to anticipate where the beams might crack. He sensed that beneath the glittering prosperity of the nation lay something unstable. The crowd outside saw triumph. Hoover sensed tension. Within months, the tension would snap, plunging the country into the Great Depression and transforming him, in the public imagination, from savior to scapegoat. To understand how the same man could be hailed as a global hero in 1919 and a national failure by 1932, we must start far before the White House, back to a small cottage in West Branch, Iowa, where a boy who would later face the world's suffering first learned the meaning of loss. Herbert Hoover was born on August 10, 1874, the second of three children in a devout Quaker household. His father, Jesse, was a blacksmith and farm implement salesman, energetic and compassionate. His mother, Huldah, was a gentle, religious woman with a gift for community leadership. Their home was modest but warm and affectionate. Then, when Herbert was six, his father died suddenly of heart disease. 2 years later, his mother died as well, leaving the children orphaned. The boy who would one day organize relief efforts across continents first learned responsibility by watching relatives divide the children among themselves and send them to different parts of the country. Hoover was taken in by his aunt and uncle in Oregon. The cross-country rail journey was long, frightening, and disorienting, but it planted in him a lifelong resilience and independence. In Oregon, Hoover found solace in work. He learned bookkeeping, helped with the family's commerce, and was given the chance to cultivate his natural intelligence. He was quiet, serious, and observant. His Quaker upbringing instilled a sense of duty, modesty, and moral responsibility that he carried throughout his career, even when those values collided painfully with political realities. He loved mathematics, geology, and surveying. The orderliness of the natural world appealed to him. Its patterns could be measured, understood, and mastered. In 1891, Hoover entered the brand new Stanford University as part of its first class. He worked to pay his tuition, laundry, typing, anything he could, and studied geology with determination. Stanford was where Hoover's intensity, resourcefulness, and sense of purpose came sharply into focus. He also met a brilliant young woman named Lou Henry, who shared his love of geology and the outdoors. They married in 1899, forming a partnership that would become one of the strongest and happiest presidential marriages in American history. Lou Hoover was athletic, educated, and unpretentious, with a keen sense of adventure. Together they would live all over the world, raising two sons while navigating mining camps, boardrooms, and global crises. Hoover became a mining engineer, a field that took him across the globe. In China, Australia, Russia, and throughout Europe, he helped reorganize mines, open new ones, and streamline operations. He had a gift not only for engineering but for management. He understood systems, the flow of materials, the coordination of labor, the logistics of supply. By the age of 40, he had become a wealthy businessman and a respected figure in international mining circles. He was known for his relentless work ethic, his no-nonsense problem-solving, and his reputation for integrity. Then came World War I. Hoover was in London when the war broke out in 1914. Thousands of Americans were stranded, their funds frozen, their travel routes blocked. Hoover, without any government title or mandate, organized a volunteer committee to help them, securing travel documents, arranging transportation, providing aid. His efficiency stunned observers. The U.S. ambassador later said that Hoover accomplished more in a few weeks than most governments could in months. That effort was only the beginning. Soon, Belgium came under occupation by German forces, and its population faced starvation. Hoover organized the Commission for Relief in Belgium, the largest humanitarian undertaking the world had ever seen at that point. He negotiated with the Germans and the British, two enemies locked in total war, to allow food shipments through. He mobilized donors, ships, warehouses, and distribution networks. By 1919, Hoover had helped feed millions in Belgium, France, Poland, and other war-torn areas. He became a symbol of American compassion, efficiency, and international leadership. After the war, President Woodrow Wilson appointed him to lead the American Relief Administration, where Hoover again coordinated massive aid programs, this time feeding millions in Central and Eastern Europe and even in Soviet Russia after a devastating famine. His motto, repeated often, became famous: "Food will win the war." And later, "I propose to feed every hungry child." By 1920, Hoover's reputation was almost unassailable. Republicans and Democrats alike courted him as a possible presidential candidate. He ultimately joined the Republican Party and served as Secretary of Commerce under both Harding and Coolidge. In that role, he transformed what had been a minor department into a powerhouse. He standardized products, encouraged economic cooperation, and pushed for improvements in radio regulation, aviation, and public safety. He was a technocrat with vision, a man who believed that rational management and scientific planning could solve almost any problem. By 1928, the booming economy and Hoover's sterling reputation made him the obvious Republican nominee. The campaign was almost a coronation. He promised continued prosperity, efficient government, and the kind of managerial competence that had defined his entire life. He won in a landslide. Americans believed they were electing a genius engineer who would protect and extend their prosperity. 8 months later, the stock market crashed. The Great Depression began. And Herbert Hoover found himself confronting the most severe economic crisis in American history, not with the power of hindsight, but with the tools and theories available at the time. The story of Hoover's presidency is often told as a simple morality tale: a man who refused to act, who believed in rugged individualism, who stood by while the country collapsed. The truth is more complex and in many ways more tragic. Hoover did act, far more than many people realize. But he acted within a framework of beliefs that, while noble, proved ill-fitted to the unprecedented scale of the crisis. Hoover believed deeply in volunteerism. He believed that business leaders, labor unions, and civic organizations should cooperate to stabilize the economy. He believed that government should encourage and coordinate this cooperation, not impose solutions by force. He also believed, as a matter of principle, that the federal government should not provide direct cash payments to individuals. To Hoover, such payments risked undermining the moral fiber of the nation and creating permanent dependency. When the crash came, Hoover urged major corporations not to cut wages. He convened meetings with business leaders, labor representatives, and governors. He expanded public works spending, including early work on what would become the Hoover Dam. He signed the Federal Home Loan Bank Act to support mortgage lending. He pushed for tax cuts in the early phase of the downturn and then, as the budget collapsed, backed tax increases in 1932 to restore fiscal balance. He supported the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which lent money to banks and railroads to stabilize the financial system. These measures were unprecedented at the time. Yet they were not enough, not for what the Depression became. The crisis deepened. Banks failed. Farm prices collapsed. Workers lost jobs in the millions. Breadlines lengthened. Hoover's reluctance to expand direct federal aid to individuals became a political liability. Many Americans saw not principle in his approach but indifference. Photographs of makeshift shelters, dubbed Hoovervilles, spread across newspapers. Veterans marched on Washington in 1932 demanding early payment of their bonuses, and Hoover, fearing violence, ordered federal troops to clear them from their encampments. It was a terrible decision, one that haunted his reputation. The public mood shifted decisively. Hoover, once adored, was now portrayed as cold, out of touch, even cruel. He was none of those things. Privately, he agonized over the suffering of the country, but the political narrative had hardened. The election of 1932 was a rout. Franklin Roosevelt swept into office with promises of bold experimentation. Hoover left the White House defeated and heartbroken. But the story of Hoover's life did not end there. In the decades after his presidency, he rebuilt his reputation through public service, scholarship, and humanitarian work, much as John Quincy Adams had done a century earlier. Roosevelt appointed him to lead global famine relief in World War II. President Truman later asked him to reorganize the executive branch, leading to the Hoover Commission, which reshaped modern government. Hoover wrote books, gave lectures, and lived long enough to see some historians revise their view of him, not as the architect of the Depression, but as a man whose strengths were ill-matched to the scale of a global catastrophe. Herbert Hoover died in 1964 at the age of 90, having outlived many of his harshest critics. His legacy remains one of the most complex in presidential history. He was a brilliant organizer who fed millions, yet a president who struggled to rescue his own country. He was a compassionate man who believed deeply in helping others, yet his philosophy prevented him from embracing some of the tools that might have eased his nation's suffering. He was a humanitarian before he was a politician, and perhaps that is why the political brutality of the early 1930s cut him so deeply. For podcast listeners following this long series of presidents, Hoover represents a turning point, the end of the old world and the beginning of the modern one. He stood on the threshold of the administrative state, believing in science, efficiency, and rational planning. He believed in cooperation over coercion, voluntarism over compulsion, moral suasion over political force. And yet the world he inherited required something else: speed, boldness, massive federal intervention. Hoover's tragedy is that he was right about many things, but wrong about the one thing that mattered most in 1930, the scale of response needed. And yet there is something deeply moving about Hoover's life. He never lost his compassion. He never grew bitter. He spent the last decades of his life trying once again to help others, quietly, without fanfare, just as he had done before the world ever knew his name. History remembers him as a failed president. But history also remembers him as the man who fed Belgium, who saved millions of war orphans, who gave his entire life to public service. Both stories are true. They coexist in the life of a single man who rose from orphanhood to global fame, who fell from political grace, and who spent the rest of his life trying to make peace with both his conscience and his country. Herbert Hoover remains one of the most human of presidents, brilliant, flawed, earnest, wounded, and in the end still trying to help.